Hello and welcome to this podcast from the BBC World Service. Please let us know what you think and tell other people about us on social media. Podcasts from the BBC World Service are supported by advertising.
Hello, I'm Charles Gitonga, and here is what's coming up for you on this edition of Focus on Africa. The Ivory Coast Student and School Federation, a powerful student union, has been suspended and its leaders arrested. We'll tell you why and what makes them so powerful.
What has happened recently is shocking. Everybody is wondering what did really happen, because there was a death of one student and people want clarification.
And in Somalia, business owners in Mogadishu in a bind as jihadists, Al-Shabaab, demand they remove security cameras from their premises.
Al-Shabaab are reacting this because mostly their agents, their hitmen, all live in these areas.
It's Friday, October 18th. We begin in Kenya. Dramatic political events have taken place in the capital, Nairobi, over the past few days. And last night, they culminated in this.
The Senate has resolved to remove from office by impeachment His Excellency Rigathi Gachagua AGH, the Deputy President of the Republic of Kenya. Accordingly, His Excellency Rigathi Gachagua AGH ceases to hold office.
That is the Speaker of the Kenyan Senate announcing the formal impeachment of the Deputy President Rigathi Gachagua on Thursday. Mr. Gachagua failed to appear before the senators to defend himself, as his lawyer informed the House that he was taken seriously ill that very afternoon. The impeachment vote by the Senate came a few days after the National Assembly overwhelmingly voted to remove him from office. He was facing 11 charges of gross violation of the Constitution and was found guilty on 5 of those counts. And now, the Kenyan President William Ruto has nominated a new candidate to deputize him. President Ruto's new choice, Professor Kithure Kindiki, has been in government serving as the Cabinet Secretary for Internal Security. His nomination on Friday was quickly approved by the National Assembly, but blocked by the High Court almost immediately. These events are unfolding just a few months after scores of young Kenyans from across the country held massive protests against a proposed finance bill. The demonstrations spiraled into demands for a change in governance and service delivery for Kenyans. President Ruto responded by firing his cabinet. Among those fired and later reappointed to the cabinet is his now deputy nominee, Professor Kindiki. So who is he and what next after his nomination? Let's hear from my colleague, Frenny Joey.
Professor Kithure Kindiki is 52 years old. He's not new to government, politics, and even controversies. He's a lawyer by profession. In his early days, he worked as a university lecturer teaching law here in Kenya. His entry into politics was in 2013 when he was elected senator. He was re-elected to the Senate in 2017, where he has served as a majority leader and later deputy speaker. He found his way to President Ruto's cabinet as cabinet secretary for the Ministry of Interior when Ruto formed government in 2022. He has been one of the most vocal supporters of President Ruto's administration, well known for trying to solve the problem of insecurity in the north of Kenya, where bandits and suspected militants raid villages often. During the recent protests, he was caught up in controversy for defending what critics called excessive use of force by police on peaceful demonstrators. He was one of the cabinet secretaries fired in the protest-driven government shakeup, only to be reinstated to the same portfolio. But when it comes to party and regional politics in Kenya, Professor Kindiki hails from Central Kenya, which is a major voting bloc in Kenyan politics.
Frenny Joey there. Now, many young Kenyans have been demanding for change in government. Does this impeachment give them hope? I spoke to Ken Ogembo, a community organizer at Siasa Place, a youth-led civil society organization based in Nairobi, and Wanjiku Thiga, a young leader and aspiring politician.
This is purely political differences between the president and the deputy, and it has nothing to do with Kenyans. Because if it has anything to do with Kenyans, the Kenyan people said, what we don't want is the entire cabinet is not working. He still went back and picked the sum of the same people, the loyalties. Kenyans are asking for service delivery, and there is no deliberate effort that we are seeing towards improving service delivery. People are asking about transparency and accountability. Where are we with Adani?
Right, and that's a deal to take over the airport.
Okay. When Kenyans of goodwill are asking of questions with service delivery, the president is not talking about it. When Kenyans are asking about issues, how are you selling our airport? The president is not responding. He is promising other things. When people are asking for accountability, service delivery, he's just not responding.
Wanjiku, what do you think? Do Kenyans, especially young Kenyans, because yourself, you are a youth leader, is this a process by Kenyans? Is this what the country needed?
Definitely, I don't think this is what the country needed. I feel like this is a political maneuver. The president decided to sacrifice the deputy president to avert attention from himself. The young people are very, very clear. They wanted him out. It was him who was being hanged. And at the end of the day, what were young people asking? They were demanding for economic justice. They were demanding for transparency and service delivery. We see today that this country, this government, is not delivering for young people. Let's look at the student loan for the universities model.
Right.
It really does give a lot of disadvantage to the students in this country. We look at health is on its knees today in this country. We have about 16% of unemployment opportunities in Kenya. This government is not looking about that, but it's diverting its attention to a whole impeachment process. And again, young people communicated that this government is not aware. It's not delivering to its people, and they should do so. But now the government has already been moved forward to now we have a new name of an appointee deputy president that is being taken to parliament.
Except this process has been done through parliament and the Senate.
Yes.
Who are supposed to be the representatives of the people. Is there a disconnect between what the people are saying and what the politicians elected are doing?
Yes, and they tried to run a shambolic public participation process, which through our devolution is a public participation is a principle of devolution, but it was such a shambolic process. The community gave its true feedback that this is not what they want. They went back to economic justice, but they forced their issues. You see, if we have political manipulation, not following rule of law, ignoring rule of law, this is where it gets us. And the Constitution stands at, it's the supreme document of this country, but also it can be used or manipulated to get what they want.
Yeah. So, Ken, you talked about this being a possible sign for the next deputy president of Kenya, that there is a way they might behave. Do you feel the process has achieved anything towards promoting governance in the country? Because the impeached deputy president, Rigathi Gachagua, was found guilty on 5 of the 11 grounds. Some of them included promoting divisive politics. Will this help?
Yes, to some extent. I think we just need to think through even how they voted. One of the major things that we need to be a bit cautious is anything to do with money laundering. Was shot down by the same MPs. The charges with which they approved had everything to do with the deputy president as a person, but anything to do with issues of corruption were upheld. So that gives you the...
Why did they do that, in your opinion?
In my opinion, is because that could be used to set precedent, and later on they might be asked to explain where their wealth comes from. So probably if... As leaders, they're probably also not sure with how they got their wealth, that you can't charge people and you can't explain your wealth as well. And that's very common. There are a lot of things we need to look at. This presidency or this government needs to be kept on check. And leaving the process to parliament alone is not going to improve what we are trying to see. So this should set a precedent so that people can see from outside and say, we're done with this. Who is next? So that each and every office that is not delivering, we need to take it to the task and ensure that people in those offices are able to deliver.
Right. So on the same breath then, as we move on, how would you want to see elected leaders being held to account by Kenyans, making sure that the voice of the Kenyans, because both of you have told me that what has happened is not the priority of the country at the moment. How do we hold the leaders accountable and make sure that the message by the electorate is not being lost among the political class?
I think for me, I'll want to see our parliament, especially parliament, to be strengthened so that they can be independent. Judiciary is also, we clearly see it's dependent, it's not independent. And these are institutions that safeguard the interest of Kenyans. We want to see EACC being strengthened.
That's the Ethics and Anti-Corruption
Commission. Yes. For example, and again, for me, it's also to encourage active citizenry in our country. For me, I come from a county called Kiambu County, and our governor can't explain where $2.2 billion is, and we're holding him accountable. We are doing social audits at our county level. We are engaging, we are writing petitions. We even have a court case ongoing with him. So it's also to encourage Kenyans to be active citizens. And also, above all, is to have a whistleblower protection. With the current case of Adani, there was a young man who was the one who was the whistleblower. But at this moment, his life is at risk. So for us to even to encourage more people to whistleblow matters that are going on, let's also have a whistleblower protection, which is strengthened so that it can be able to protect Kenyans who have the interest at heart. And also to hold the committee in parliament, the one that the Public Finance Committee, it's the one that it should take care of the public purse. So let's also not just look at the president. Let's look at the committee that is in charge of them. Let's know their names one by one and let's hold them accountable, not just the president and the deputy president. It's everyone who is controlling or who's in charge of taking care of Kenyans' purse.
Many thanks to Ken Ogembo and Wanjiku Thiga in Kenya. Authorities in Ivory Coast have arrested members of a powerful student federation that is accused of sowing terror on campuses in a murder investigation after two people, including its leader's main rival, were found dead. Police and prosecutors swooped on six members of the Ivory Coast Student and School Federation, FESI, one of the country's student unions, and halted all its activities. The authorities acted following the recent death of student Ziggy Mars Obien Diagwe, a rival of FESI's leader, Sie Kambu. Mr. Diagwe was found dead last September. A government statement said he had been abducted by individuals identified as members of FESI. After a police investigation was opened, officers arrested and detained six members of the union, Kambu included. To understand how FESI works, we approached one of the former members of the federation. Alex Ackerman studied at the University of Kokodi in Abidjan. He was one of the first members of FESI when it was launched in 1990. Now a lecturer in the UK and political analyst, Alex started by giving us the history of FESI, the student union.
FESI was created in 1990, and the objective of FESI was to try to work with the authorities to ensure that the living condition of students, both higher education, universities, as well as people conditions are maintained or improved. And obviously, it gradually built up. The basis keeps on enlarging because they managed to visit almost all the schools in Cote d'Ivoire, and then the students have to join to become a member.
So how powerful then are they in the country as an organization? Because they do seem to have become controversial in the recent years.
Yes, it's a trade union for your students. Now, obviously, governments have their own ways of dealing with them. And then obviously, this can, as a union, if they don't agree, they express themselves. So this is why if there's an issue that raises the government, it doesn't work. Obviously, every union has your right to strike. So FESI is so strong because most schools, universities, higher education have branches of FESI. So if there's an issue which is not addressed, it's not just one school in one area. So because the student can be affected nationally, then if there's an issue which is not resolved, then decision which is taken, for instance, to go on strike will then affect, you know, the schooling activities across the nation.
Right. As we speak now, Alex, the FESI has been, all the activities have been suspended, and their leader, Mr. Sie Kambu, has been arrested following the death of a student by the name of Zigimars Obien Diagwe. First of all, tell us about this Mr. Kambu, the leader of that organization.
They see as a structure and a public organization, they renew their executive committee regularly, I think every 2 or 3 years. During campaigns, you have different factions, different candidates, and this is part of the democratic process. I think the recent election took place just last December, and Mr. Kambu is the one who has been elected, who is currently the general secretary of FECI. Now, during the election, we have another candidate who was not elected. So it was Mr. Ziggy. And what has happened recently is shocking. Everybody is wondering what did really happen because there's a death of one student. But what is really shocking is that when there's a death of a person who was kidnapped and obviously found dead, the normal process is to investigate and then based on the investigation, then make arrest and try to clarify what has happened. And then the culprit can be taken to court. But this has not happened because one wasn't elected. It's like both were at war, basically. That's the impression I want to show. And people want clarification. Because of the gravity of the issue, the government has decided to suspend the activities of the movement of FECI.
The thing is, FECI, this is not the first time they are making headlines for the wrong reasons. Because according to Human Rights Watch, you know, they have investigated them at some point. And since 2002, members of FECI have been accused of, in numerous occasions, of attacking fellow students, you know, in a brutal manner. Why do these attacks happen? And is this how students' politics are really conducted in Ivory Coast?
In 2002, we had a rebellion. People organized themselves to come and overthrow the government by force. So from 2002 up till 2011, we had even the war, open war, when the French military decided to choose one candidate and put him in power. So the whole country, the attitude of our young generation has changed based on this violent period between 2002 and even after 2011. So the way we conducted ourselves is completely different from now.
Why has the organization changed and become an institution that's being associated with the things that we are talking about? Murders,
but that's what I'm saying.
Violence.
Because of the military intervention in politics, for almost 10 years, we had military issues within the country. And this has affected all sectors of life. And it's sad, but people can carry arms or carry knives as if it was a pen. And obviously, when people don't have argument to put down or to lay down their views, that can lead to, you know, violence.
Alex, you however did say that since the military intervention in the country, in the governance of the country, it's become a situation where carrying a knife is just like a pen. Would that be you saying that some FECI members are carrying arms or do carry arms?
From my own understanding and also from my own experience, somebody, when they become responsible or even militant, do not get involved in violent activities. I mean, FECI members cannot behave like gangsters, never, because obviously they have responsibility. I mean,
right. So in short, Alex, then you are saying that all the accusations that they have faced before, are you saying there is no basis that there have been, you know, criminal elements within FECI or that some of their members have been involved in wrongdoing? So you're saying all of that has no basis. It's interference from authorities.
I mean, what I'm saying is quite simple. When you are responsible, you know that you cannot at the same time be involved in violent or criminal activity. For clarity, for things to be clear and based on fact, they need to do all this investigation.
Alex Ackerman, lecturer and political analyst and a former member of FECI. We have approached FECI for a comment and we are waiting their response. This is Focus on Africa from the BBC World Service. Next to Somalia's capital, Mogadishu, where there are reports that owners of businesses there have started removing closed-circuit television or CCTV cameras after attacks and threats from militant Islamist Al-Shabaab. Initially formed as an insurgent youth militia in the early 2000s, With the aim of establishing an Islamic State, Al-Shabaab has been a consistent thorn in the flesh of subsequent governments in the country. The Al-Qaeda-linked group controls large parts of Somalia in the south and in cities like Mogadishu, collects revenue through extortion from business owners. In efforts to improve security in the capital, authorities in Somalia have been demanding that all business owners install the CCTV cameras, but Al-Shabaab has repeatedly warned the businesses against complying with the government directive. To understand what's going on, I've been speaking with Ahmed Hadi, an analyst and commentator on Somalia affairs.
So start by telling us what's really happening with business owners in Mogadishu, because you have on one hand a government asking them to keep their CCTV cameras on, but Al-Shabaab on the other hand threatening to destroy their businesses and even harm the business owners if they install the cameras. What's going on?
Let me give you a quick background. The CCTV started some time back, and it's actually transformed the security of Mogadishu. And the government used to both fight organized crime instigated by Al-Shabaab as well as the homicides. And these days, the apprehension of criminals is high statistically in relation to the past times. And this is mainly because of the CCTV cameras, where security agencies or security forces use as a way of investigating crimes and finding people who commit these crimes. Now, what's taking place here in Mogadishu is not all the Mogadishu, it's the purpose of Mogadishu. And the government has successfully implemented in the city, the main parts of the city, but as it goes in the suburbs, Al-Shabaab are reacting this because mostly their agents, their hitmen, all live in this area, so they don't want government or security forces use this CCTV camera to track them down. And this is also as a demonstration that Al-Shabaab is still alive and kicking, and they use fear as a main factor of collecting money extortion, and as well as making people know that they still have capabilities to harm them.
So what are the business owners then doing? Are they doing what the government is saying or what the Al-Shabaab is?
Now they are in a dilemma, but as you know, most businesses are implemented this, but because it's not the corners or the suburbs of the city, the reports we have now is that some businesses are start removing after several incidents in which the owners were killed by Al-Shabaab assassins. And it's now the security agencies that's working on way to protect these owners. And also we have some accusations that the way security forces are conducting this is not the best interest of the businesses. For example, when government orders the implementation of CCTV installations in this area, the government should give them protection to the business owners. But this is not has been the case, and Al-Shabaab has exploited this loop.
Why not then just have cameras installed by the government in central areas where nobody in particular would be targeted? Are they thinking about that?
It's already has been installed in the sensitive areas and in the streets. Government has its own project of CCTV camera installations, but they use this as a supplement, so that even if the government maintained CCTVs could not capture crimes in action, then they can use as a reference to the business CCTV cameras, as well as, for example, government these days try to limit Al-Shabaab extortion of money from these businesses. So they wanted to identify Al-Shabaab agents moving from businesses to banks to these areas, so that they wanted to know what is going on there. And this has been very successful, and it has reduced the crime rates, whether it's homicide, as I have told you before, and the terrorist crimes in the city.
What is the government saying in regards to the ability to protect the very citizens, especially the business people that are playing a very, what looks like a very critical role in providing evidence of crimes, but at the same time, they are very much exposed to the business people? What is the government saying to this?
The government employed off-duty security agencies or civilian dressed like or undercover agents to protect these businesses and to protect the government in installed cameras. And this policy has succeeded in the main urban centers in the city. But I think now, as the government tries to expand its reach on the suburbs of Mogadishu and Al-Shabaab wants to counter this, I think they need to deploy more agents, more security agents and more police forces and more secret services there to protect the business owners.
Do they have the capacity to protect the businesses?
The government implemented undercover agencies where these people stay in the most sensitive areas of the businesses and the area, and if any assassin attempts happen, then they can block or they can stop this. This has been the case so far. But no, I think the government needs to deploy more resources to these hotspot areas in Mogadishu recently.
And what are the business people then saying to all that is going on?
The business people are somehow confused. The reports we have that some are removing their CCTV cameras and the government is trying to counter on this and assure that they will deploy more police force and agents to protect them. But we will know in the coming days. But what we know that this camera installation has been very instrumental in the Mogadishu security, as it has been improving recently and the number of assassinations reduced dramatically according to the statistics of security ministry, internal security ministry of Somalia and the police.
Somalia analyst Ahmed Hadi. And that's Focus on Africa today. It was produced by Frenny Joey in Nairobi, Blessing Aderuba in Lagos, and Yvette Twagira Maria in London. Paul Bachibinga was the senior producer, and Francesca Dan was the technical producer. Our editors are Andrew Lombard and Alice Mudengi. I'm Charles Gitonga. We'll speak again soon.